This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. In 2007, the popular new media site Gawker launched Jezebel.com, a sassy feminist website dedicated to women's issues.
The project, spearheaded by founding editor Anna Holmes, was hugely successful. It spawned a wave of new websites that speak mainly to younger women.
Anna Holmes and her Jezebel team are now bringing their project to print with The Book of Jezebel, an illustrated encyclopedia of lady things. It incorporates opinions and facts and charts over 1,000 topics from the word sassy to German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Anna Holmes is in New York City, and she is a writer and editor, creator of Jezebel.com. And Anna, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So where'd you get the idea for creating Jezebel.com the first time?
I don't know that I have the idea. I was asked to help create what Gawker Media, the parent company, was calling Girly Gawker. So they wanted to create a women's site. I wouldn't take credit for the idea of a women's site, but I certainly, you know, along with the staffers that I hired, we decided to go in a certain direction, which was that we were going to acknowledge that women are interested in the kind of more superficial things that they're always being fed by traditional mainstream media like celebrity and fashion, but that they also are just as interested in issues of politics, domestic politics or international politics, gender politics, feminism, what have you. So we decided that we were going to, you know, do the fashion celebrity thing, but do it in a smart way, which is to say, not tell readers what to buy, not instruct them that they needed to lose weight or look a certain way or find a man or keep a man, but we would also, you know, cover things like politics, and we did that with the 2008 election, which the readers really loved.
And did you sense when you were brought on board that there was a gap, a Jezebel-sized gap?
It's funny because I was a consumer of the internet, which is to say that I certainly read blogs and some traditional news media outlet websites, but it didn't seem like there was any really. There was a women's website that spoke to me or my peers. At the time, I was 34. I'm now 40. There were women's websites, but they tend to be really, really, really broad in scope, no pun intended, like iVillage, which I don't know how you would describe iVillage other than there was content for quote-unquote women on there, but it was just kind of nebulous and vague and hard to define. And I had worked at women's magazines and celebrity magazines for many, many, many years before I started the site, and so there was a certain frustration that had been built up within me, both as a consumer of that sort of media, but also as a producer of content for that sort of media, that it was just kind of one note and didn't recognize or acknowledge the diversity of women's interests. So when we started the site, we were just kind of doing a site that we thought we would want to read, and hoped that other young women felt the same way and would flock to it, and they did, which we feel really lucky about.
And I want to talk about the name Jezebel. It seems like you're making a point there. Who is the Jezebel in the title of your magazine?
Well, I didn't come up with the name. There was a long discussion about what the site was going to be called a few months before it launched. I believe it launched in May of 2007. So this was probably about March or April. And we were all throwing names around, and it had to be something that was memorable, that was fairly short, you know, so you could type it into your internet browser. We'd come up with a lot of kind of made-up names that might be somewhat memorable, and somebody, I believe it was Gabby Derbyshire, who was the chief operating officer of the company, the highest-ranking woman there, had suggested Jezebel, and I didn't like it. And it's hard for me to explain why I didn't like it. I guess it felt to me like it was somewhat obvious, you know, that we were going to pick a word that meant something historically quote unquote bad and like reclaim it as good. But for some reason I just didn't like it, but I was overruled. You know, it was my site in the sense that I ran it, but I certainly didn't own it. And for a long time, like a good 6 or 7 months after it launched, when people would ask me what I did, I would say I kind of hedge or try to avoid saying the name because I hated it so much. So I would say things like, well, I run a women's website for Gawker Media, and you know, inevitably, someone would say, well, what's it called? And so I'd have to just come out with the name anyway. But I really cringed at the name for quite a while.
Yeah, naming stuff is hard, as we discovered when we started our radio show. So there is a perception in popular culture of feminism. You encounter it a lot. It's dour. It's humorless. And this is something that people have been talking about for decades.
Sure.
Do you think you've changed that discussion with Jezebel?
I think that I think that we have changed it. I don't know that we've changed it like across the board, but I do think that there are a lot of young women, and when I say use the phrase young women, I'm really referring to like anyone between, so let's say, 18 and like 50. You know, I mean, it's a pretty broad demographic. But I think that there are a lot more young women who, I think, by the example, not just of the site's writers, but also its readers and commenters, who, you know, who have come to see that the idea of what feminism is pretty simple, and I don't think it's that controversial. I mean, the idea of the desire to have equality between the sexes, you know, and economically and politically, and socially, is not something that you would think that most people would take issue with. But, you know, historically, it had been made into a bad word or a bad concept. So we felt when we were doing the site, that if we talked about feminism in a very matter-of-fact way, a very unapologetic way, that we embraced it, you know, both the concept but also, you know, embraced ourselves as being feminists, that maybe some of the stink that had been rubbed on to the word or concept might get washed away a bit, and that even, you know, the particularly younger readers, by which I mean, you know, like the 18-year-olds, would see by example that there wasn't anything really controversial or scary at all about an interest in equality and in gender politics, and that we could, you know, talk about those things 1 minute and then, you know, squeal over a cute puppy picture, you know, 10 minutes later. So that there wasn't this kind of scary it wasn't as scary or reactionary necessarily as they'd been taught to believe, just in kind of, you know, through society. I had certainly grown up, and I was born in the early 70s, and I'd grown up in a household that was very feminist, and I had never felt that it was something to be ashamed of or to turn away from. But not, you know, a lot of people didn't grow up in environments like that, and weren't marinating in you know, discussions of gender politics. And I knew a lot of those people who didn't and who rejected it as a descriptor. And so I just kind of we just wanted to make it friendlier, but just again show by example that young women, you know, are diverse and many young women call themselves feminists, and they do not look like a stereotypical Rush Limbaugh type.
And do you think you know, young women are buying this? Because there have been some young feminists who say, yeah, we actually need a new word for this because the old word is not working out for us. People do have these negative associations. Do you think that Jezebel has made it kind of okay to be a feminist?
I think for some people, yeah. For a lot of the readers, I think so. That has, and I've heard things to that effect. I mean, whether it's people who emailed in or people who've commented on the site or people I've met in person. I'm not going to make any, you know, grand pronouncements about how it's affected, you know, young women in America, because you know, I'm not sure what percentage of young women in America, you know, read the site or know that it exists. But I think that there has been a really impassioned reaction to the site. And an embrace of the idea of calling oneself a feminist. I don't know what word would suffice. Like I'm not sure like what kind of replacement word would be a good one. And I don't believe that there actually needs to be one. I just think that it needs to be reclaimed, you know, quote unquote.
Well, let's get into the Book of Jezebel. It's written as an encyclopedia. It's serious. It's zany, sometimes in the same sentence. Mm-hmm. What were you setting out to accomplish with this?
You know, we had just talked about extending the brand of the site to like another media platform. And you know, we thought about books. So I came up with a couple of ideas of maybe of like a Jezebel book, and a couple, you know, they didn't all sound right, and I had great feedback from both the people higher up at Gawker Media, but also the agent who was working with us. And then I thought, you know what, we need to do a book that kind of encapsulates like the worldview of the site and its readers. And I personally really like reference books. Like I like sitting down and reading encyclopedias and dictionaries and atlases. And so I decided to do an encyclopedia that would, you know, be a look into the sensibility of the site, through, you know, about 1,000 entries, you know, as you said, ranging from Sassy magazine to Zygote.
I loved Sassy magazine, by the way. That brought back a lot of memories.
It was very important in my development as an adolescent. And I think, you know, I think that was the case with a lot of the writers on the site. And so maybe we were trying to channel, you know, our love of Sassy into this kind of new web venture when it started. But I thought it would be a fun thing to have an encyclopedia as opposed to, let's say, doing a book that was reprinting posts that appeared on the site. Because, you know, you can always just go on the site and read them. And there's been some great, great material on the site, but I just didn't think it needed to be collected into a bound volume. I wanted to do something that was original, that hadn't appeared on the site before. So that was the idea that everyone kind of, you know, liked and agreed to do, and that's what we ended up doing.
I like that there's such range in the book. Now, you have something funny like a sensitivity chip, and there's a picture of Brad Pitt, and it says this guy doesn't have one, with a particularly dull look on his face. It's really funny. And then you've got kind of a reframing of Clytemnestra and the Greek myth, and I thought that was really interesting. Can you tell us about that one?
About Brad Pitt?
Brad Pitt, about Clytemnestra.
I'm going to have to grab the book and open it up to look at it because there's so many.
There's a lot of things
in
there.
Forgotten.
Well, you're telling it, you're retelling it from a feminist point of view. Whoever wrote that entry is writing about how her daughter was killed and she responded by stabbing her husband. And that this was eventually Athena upholds patriarchy, and it kind of makes you look at it in a new way.
Well, we tried to, you know, bring a sort of feminist sensibility to every entry in the book. And I mean, when you mentioned sensitivity chip, I mean, that was kind of like a joke entry. Like it didn't have to be in the book, but it was one of those things where we thought that would be funny, and I found a funny picture of Brad Pitt to put alongside it. But we wanted to bring the site sensibility to basically everything, and in some cases, that's, as you said, like a reframing of a historical figure or event, and sometimes it's a very obvious take on someone that the site dislikes, like Phyllis Schlafly. You know, like, you know what you're going to get when you see that there's an entry on Phyllis Schlafly. You're not, you know, it's not going to be a surprise that she's not exactly beloved by the site's writers.
Well, right now we are talking to Anna Holmes, the founding editor of Jezebel.com. The Book of Jezebel, an illustrated encyclopedia of lady things, came out yesterday. And we'd like to hear from you. Do you think feminism needs a new sassy voice like this? And if you were going to make an encyclopedia of lady things, what do you want to see in that book? What would you include? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234.
We'll be back with Anna Holmes in just a few minutes. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're speaking with Anna Holmes, founding editor of Jezebel.com, and she's a big part of the new book, The Book of Jezebel, an illustrated encyclopedia of lady things. That came out yesterday. It's set up as an encyclopedia, A to Z. Anna, I wanted to hear what's one of your favorite entries in The Book of Jezebel?
You know, it's funny. I spend so much time staring at the text
it's all a blur,
and I'm not sure I have a favorite, but I do have like a favorite entry that's more of an illustration, the Crazy Cat Lady illustration. I really like the idea of crazy cat ladies because I kind of consider myself one, even though I only have one cat. The cats are really popular, at least on the internet. And so we had an illustrator named Wendy McNaughton who had just finished a book about cats, actually, with her girlfriend or her wife. I'm not sure if they're married, but I should say wife. They live in San Francisco, and Wendy is also into cats, and so she did a kind of taxonomy of the crazy cat lady, which is to say there's a woman holding a cat in the illustration, and there's cats all around her, and there's little, you know, everything is kind of detailed as to what's in her hands, you know, treats and a camera for pictures and catnip, and there's dirty kitty litter on the ground next to her, and it's just a very funny way to approach doing an entry, which is to say just doing it graphically as opposed to text. But I also, you know, there's like a lot of fun stuff to read here, whether it's jokey or whether it's serious. But that tends to be my favorite entry in the whole book, but maybe because I identify with it so closely.
Well, but there's a double-edged thing there, isn't it? It's kind of a funny thing, but also it's the new model stereotype for what people might used to call a spinster or an old maid.
Right, right. Yeah, well, and you know, funnily enough, we do have a whole sidebar on spinsters, or at least like famous spinsters of history. And then I believe there's also an entry on what the concept of the term spinster means. But this crazy cat lady illustration was a loving look at a kind of stereotype, as opposed to furthering the stereotype. I think that there are a lot of people who identify with the woman depicted in this illustration. So, you know, just like the word spinster has a negative connotation and the phrase crazy cat lady does, it certainly doesn't in this book.
Here's one that some people around the office liked. Inhibitions, and I'll read from it. Mm-hmm. Things that usually keep us from dancing on bars, punching people we have to share public transportation with, telling our bosses what we really think of them, and wearing pajama bottoms to cocktail parties. Things that sometimes keep us from approaching attractive people, asking for raises we deserve, and otherwise taking risks that might pay off big in the long run. Kind of another double-edged one there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there were about 30 different people who wrote entries for the book, and they were all, as my friend calls them, Jezebel adjacent. So either they worked for the site, or they had worked for the site, or they had contributed to the site at some point. And so, you know, it's really interesting to see what everyone came up with. And they were given assignments kind of based on their interests. You know, so someone who has an interest in 20th century female writers and really, you know, let's say hates popular culture or at least hates celebrity culture wasn't going to be given an entry on Lindsay Lohan. but, you know, but that particular entry, you know, it's funny because I'm forgetting who wrote what. And I think a lot of the writers are forgetting what they wrote. So I can't give the person who wrote that credit, unfortunately, unless I go look in my computer file. But it's fun to see how people interpreted different things.
I like how you interpreted catfight, which is, you know, everyone says that in culture today, but it ends with, you know, the word we use when we want to belittle an argument between two women. Mm-hmm. It's got a point to it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, you know, it's certainly a phrase or a term that I used when I was much younger. I think I didn't understand the gendered implications behind it. But, you know, when I became aware of that, when I was in my early 20s, I stopped doing that because there seems to be a certain sort of glee in that term, like the idea of women arguing or the idea of women having strong opinions. And I think that women oftentimes are mocked for having strong opinions or they're pilloried for it. And I think that, you know, both of those things, you find that in that phrase, catfight, because women are, you know, women may love cats, but we're nothing like cats.
You, there are cat ladies, but women are not like cats.
Right, check. Right.
You also pay tribute to a lot of historical and pop culture icons throughout the book. Any that you want to give a shout out to?
I had a lot of fun with some of the women, some of the female visual artists who I didn't really know a lot about. Like certainly I've heard of Jenny Holzer, and I know a little bit about her work, but you know, having an entry written on her and then going through her her archives or of art and trying to pick an image that would go alongside her entry, I think was really fun for me, and I think it was really fun for the other writers who did that as well, because we wanted to acknowledge people, women mostly, who are either, you know, famous in the present or the past. But, you know, it's you wouldn't necessarily think that you're going to have visual artists represented in a book like this. And certainly someone called me out for totally neglecting female composers. But it is reflective of what we kind of know collectively as the writers and editors on this book. And we definitely missed a lot of stuff. I mean, I have a Microsoft Word file that must have 20 things on it right now of entries that we forgot to put in there.
For part two, the sequel.
Well, if it sells well enough, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, we could only do so much, and I can't kick myself too much for the things that we left out, just because we did work on it for a long time and very hard, and I think it's I wouldn't call it comprehensive, but it wasn't trying to be. But I do think that there's a lot there for people to chew on.
Would you think that this would be a good gift for someone who's got a teenage daughter?
I would say it would be a good gift for someone who has a teenage daughter if that teenage daughter is, you know, I think over the age of 16 would be good. I'll put it that way.
Adult content.
Yeah. There's
There's a picture of a placenta, but that shouldn't be the worst thing in there.
It's definitely not the worst thing in there. There are some graphic illustrations that are not sexual in nature, but they are biological in nature. And so, you know, there might be some parents who find a rendering of the female anatomy to be something they don't want their daughters to see. but there's a little bit of an edge to it. But I'd say that a teenager over the age of 16 is probably pretty safe. And you know what? Teenagers are a lot more worldly than they were when I was a teenager, so it's very possible that a 14-year-old would find nothing to blink in this book.
You called it an encyclopedia of lady things, a deliberate play on, you know, lady parts, which I think has been a euphemism that's been kicking around for a while. Mm-hmm. Are you trying to get people to be just sort of, I don't know, less freaked out by things that have to do with women, to bring them, you know, in all of their glory into the spotlight?
Yeah, and actually that's why you know, I would say that we included things in the book and have included on the site illustrations, like I just mentioned, that are of the female anatomy, or just being kind of bawdy or unapologetic about being human and being female. We like to, as they say, offer up too much TMI in posts, and you know, the site's kind of notorious for doing that historically, for having some very personal posts put up that were fairly graphic in nature, usually very funny, but there's really nothing to be ashamed of. And I think, you know, young women, at least when I was young, we were socialized to kind of believe that our bodies were both for public consumption, but also that they were gross. And you know, you see that in the marketing of products towards women, whether it's like feminine deodorants and stuff like that. I'm just not a believer that women should be ashamed of their bodies, and I think a lot of women don't really know their bodies that well. So we like to just kind of throw it all out there.
All right. Well, Anna, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That was Anna Holmes, creator of Jezebel.com. And her new book, and the book of the whole website, is called The Book of Jezebel.
Coming up, why do bugs gross us out so much? Our next guest studies insects, but he kind of fears them, too. Stick around. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.